Cheese Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Bullet Train, Luck, Prey, Bodies, 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 and The Sandman. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring 13 Lives. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The thing that's been dominating movie news, at least at the end of this week, was the shakeup that's happening at Warner Brothers and HBO Max. Now, you have to understand the history of this. HBO Max is Warner Brothers' streaming service, but it's also a lot more than that. It involves all the stuff from HBO, which means it's using a lot of third-party content licensed for HBO. Plus, it has all these like different channels that takes you to like to Turner Classics and all this kind of all these things that are under the WB umbrella. And Discovery recently merged with HBO, and Discovery has their own Discovery Plus streaming service, which does a lot of their reality programming and the stuff you'd find on the cable Discovery Channel. Also on top of it, there's a new CEO at Warner Brothers. And this week, after the quarterly earning report came out, he announced a change, a big difference that's going to be happening. They're going to be revamping HBO Max and Discovery Plus, and the goal is to merge the two services by the summer of 2024. Now, already some people are balking at that and saying this may not be a good idea, because when you actually look at streaming services, and I've been asked this multiple times by family members or friends or people on the radio, should I get a streaming service? Which one should I get? And I'm like, well, it just depends on what you want. You know, if you're a big Star Wars fan and Marvel fan, you got to get Disney Plus because all that stuff's there. If you love Star Trek, you're going to have to get Paramount Plus. If you want sort of the trendy younger generation stuff that cranks out new content constantly, Netflix is your game. So every streaming service is very, very different. And HBO Max, the thing that it runs into as a problem potentially is it might be too much for everybody. Putting so much under one banner could become a problem, because then you're going to justify a larger cost. You're going to be like, well, we can charge $20-25 a month. Whereas people are like, I'm paying $7 a month for Disney. You might end up pricing yourself out of the market, because what caused cable to be a problem, because most people only wanted like 5 or 6 channels on cable and they got like 150. Most of them they didn't watch, and they go, why am I paying for these? Now, in the middle of the week, it leaked that Warner Brothers was suddenly killing the HBO Max film Batgirl, which was already pretty much finished with production. It's like, it was, I think, originally budgeted for $70 million, and it ended up exploding to $90 million because of COVID protocols, and they just killed it completely. I mean, it's been done. It's very close to completion, so they're just writing off $90 million, which they can in the merger for a tax break, and that's something they can only do until mid-August. And they did the same thing with Scoob Holiday Haunt, which was meant to be a follow-up to the Scoob movie, and that thing, they sunk $40 million into it, and that thing's dead. And that left a lot of people scratching their head, and then they noticed they went on HBO Max and said, hey, here's a whole bunch of HBO Max original movies that are no longer available on the service. Stuff like American Pickle or Lockdown, that one with Chiwetel Ejiofor and Anne Hathaway. Suddenly these things just disappeared, and people are like, uh-oh, there's going to be a shakeup. And there was a huge announcement that covered a lot of stuff with Warner Brothers. But one of the things, and the reason it gave for killing the Batgirl movie, even though it was completely done almost, was they wanted to put something out that they're proud of. And they're going to refocus the DC stuff into theaters, because they're already getting rid of the Arrowverse on CW and all that ancillary shows that are involved in that. And they are saying, we're going to develop a 10-year plan like Marvel did. And I'm like, great. 14 years later, you're developing a Marvel plan. When didn't you already start this Marvel plan with the Justice League after the Avengers made it big back in 2012? And then you did this hurry up and wait and put carts in front of horses and everything. And here's the problem with that. How are you going to implement that 10-year plan when you've already got active Aquaman and Shazam and Flash and Wonder Woman movies and sequels coming out? And some of the stuff like Wonder Woman, some of the elements of the Zack Snyderverse are hardwired into her story, the fact that she disappeared for 100 years or something like that. This sounds good on paper, but it's not as easy as just saying we're going to make great movies. Because I also believe that executives honestly don't know the difference between a good movie or a bad movie if it came up and bit them in the caboose. They understand balance sheets and stars and how much money a movie has made, risk to return. They don't know what a good script looks like. They really don't. And you can't just say, oh, well, you just get something brilliant. It's like there's that scene in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure where he says, we just have to have an excellent hit. And he goes, well, we can't have a mega hit if we don't have Eddie Van Halen on guitar. And he's like, well, that's why we need to have that hit. And he goes, that's why we need to have Eddie Van Halen. They don't know exactly what to do to make it happen. They just say they need it. This could be a potential disaster for HBO Max. And I think this is also overcorrection from the fact that the 2021 slate went hybrid releases. I mean, they had like over 10 movies that went, and admittedly, very few of them did well. I mean, Dune and Godzilla and I think King Richard to a degree did well at the box office, but they look at that as leaving money on the table. But if it increased subscribers, that's money to the company. And I think they're believing that own hype. Also, you have to look at it. The Suicide Squad was never going to be a huge movie. In the Heights was never going to be a big movie. The new Matrix movie was never going to be a big hit. These are things that audiences turned out not to want necessarily. You know, that one with Angelina Jolie fighting fires, nobody was dying to see that movie. That wouldn't have been a hit whether it was a hybrid release or not. But this is, I think, overcorrecting it. This is the first time you've actually had a major studio take a decisive pivot away from their streaming service while still trying to pump up their streaming service. Well, what is it? Are you going to have original content on there? Well, but it's going to be the HBO. It's really unclear what's going to happen. This could be an absolute unmitigated disaster. It could go well, but there are a lot of pitfalls coming over with this one. We shall see what happens in the next 2 years. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to touch on is Dungeons & Dragons, Honor Among Thieves. This dropped at Comic-Con a couple weeks ago, but the movie's coming out on March 3rd.
We helped the wrong person steal the wrong thing. We didn't mean to unleash the greatest evil the world has ever known. But we're going to fix it.
So how do we pull that off?
You need to!
To give us a fighting chance. We're gonna need strength. You got this, right?
I know you don't.
We also need courage, magic, and you.
You know, this looks kind of decent. The first Dungeons & Dragons movie was really cheesy and goofy. And it's been a while since I've seen it, but it really did not. It certainly didn't amount to a Warner Brothers theatrical release. Now, Paramount's doing this one, so it looks like it's trying to at least be fun. I'm just wondering if they're going to somehow work it into people playing the game. The next one I want to talk about is John Wick 4, which is coming to theaters on March 24th.
Have you given any thought to where this ends?
The table will never stop. You know this. No one. Not even you. Kill everyone.
You ready, John?
Yeah.
I could always watch another John Wick movie. These are fun. They're not meant to be taken seriously. At a certain point, I don't know if this can extend forever, but they're certainly trying to, and I can respect that. So, yeah, I mean, this looks like it's going to be more shoot 'em up, gory, crazy, over-the-top action fun, and I'm okay with that. Good for Keanu Reeves. Continue your franchises. Up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Prey and bodies, bodies, bodies.
Because we can, can, can!
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and start talking about Prey. This new installment in the Predator franchise sees young Comanche hunters in the late 1700s who are being stalked by a warrior alien.
There's something out there. I'm coming with you.
You can't.
I'm trying to protect you.
Protect me from what?
It knows how to hunt. I know how to survive. Whatever did this, I can kill it.
I remember several months ago they announced they're going to do a new Predator movie, and I was like, okay, the thing is, the Predator movies have been hit or miss. They really, I mean, the first one's fun and it's a classic. I mean, if you watch it, it's not as good as people remember it to be. It's a little bit cheesy and corny. It's not the strongest movie. It's just iconic. And it's John McTiernan making an action movie with Schwarzenegger. And of course you got Carl Weathers in there. So, I mean, it's just hosed down with testosterone. And I actually like Predator 2, which was made in, what, the early 1990s? I really enjoyed Predator 2. It was Danny Glover and Maria Conchita Alonso and Bill Paxton and Gary Busey. That's a fun movie. That's a mixture of your standard cop movie from the late 80s, early 90s, and the Predator franchise. I thought that was somewhat unique, and they did a neat job. And then they struggled. I mean, Alien vs. Predator, those movies were okay. They kind of went off the rails with the second one. But then they said, well, they're going to go back to the Predator movies. And then they did Predators, which was awful. And then they did The Predator, which was Shane Black, which I thought had some promise, but it just wasn't as good as it could have been. And so this one, they go back to what the essence of a Predator movie was. It's closest to the original Predator. Now, this isn't in theaters. And I know that cheesed off some people because they're like, why can't I see my Predator movie in theaters? Well, the reality is these Predator movies lately have not been doing well. So it was one of those things that it makes sense that Disney would funnel it into the streaming service. Disney is all about providing new content on the streaming service so people don't cancel their subscriptions, for crying out loud. And it makes even more sense now to funnel these to Hulu because they've got the Marvel and the Star Wars series and the Pixar stuff and the kids stuff on Disney Plus, but they want people to continue to have a subscription to Hulu. And that makes total sense. But so I saw this movie and I said, you know, it's nothing new. It really isn't. I mean, oh yeah, sure, it takes place hundreds of years before the first movie. But it's essentially the same kind of story where a person's out in the woods fighting against this predator and who's vastly superior technology-wise, and can they find a way to win? And it also has a female protagonist, and I know that's ticking the right box for some people. I really don't care about the sex or gender of your protagonist. I just want a good story, and I think this one provides it. It's not really breaking new ground. It's not doing anything new or different or game-changing to the Predator universe, but it respects what the Predator universe is, and it respects and pays tribute to some of the canon that is expanded outside of the movies. I mean, to the point the comic books and the Predator movies have been pretty good at trying to honor that stuff as well. So I thought this was kind of a neat movie. I mean, well, while it doesn't break new ground, as an action thriller, it goes back to the basics that made the original Predator work. So I'm going to have to say Prey rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about bodies, bodies, bodies. A group of friends attend a party with plenty of drugs and alcohol during a storm and end up playing a murder mystery game that results in people getting killed. I just
wanna feel good. They're not as nihilistic as they look on the internet.
Silence!
Who wants to play bodies, bodies, bodies?
So how do you play?
Do you draw the piece of paper that has the X on it?
You are the murderer.
Let's go. And if you're the murderer, you have to kill someone by touching them on the back. Our friend is dead.
I knew nothing about this movie going into it. I like doing that now and then. I knew it was going to be a horror movie, sort of something scary. And it's basically that one location, because it takes place in a house, and there's many rooms in the house where it takes place, but it's just that house. Now, it's a really nice house, so it's not quite a Cabin in the Woods story, but it is the people trapped there, because there's a storm going on. I think there's a hurricane coming through, and the power's going to get knocked out, and it's just this group of nihilistic, awful, toxic friends who get together. And that's kind of the point. Now, if you remember last week, I talked about the movie Not Okay. And it was notable for me because it had such an unlikable protagonist that they even had a trigger warning at the beginning of that movie. This movie doesn't have a trigger warning, but they're all unlikable people. Everybody in this movie is just awful. And that's a game you can play with a slasher type movie. I mean, this kind of plays off the slasher genre. It fits well in there, even though it's somewhat atypical of a slasher movie. But sometimes in a slasher movie, you're just waiting for the people to get killed. You don't want to get emotionally invested in the characters in a slasher movie because it's just too unpleasant. You'd just rather have them be archetypal idiots, you know, the sex-crazed teenagers who don't care about the warnings to stay away, that kind of thing. You know, Friday the 13th, nobody in Friday the 13th or any of the subsequent movies were really likable enough that you cared any more than maybe the final girl, you know, the Jamie Lee Curtis of Halloween. The other thing this does is this works with a lot of biting social commentary on the Zoomers, which is Generation Z. And here's the thing, I don't like using the term woke in a pejorative sense, mainly because to me, woke means you're aware of the realities of life. You're aware that people have different experiences than you do. You're aware that even though you may not encounter racism, other people do. And don't be a jerk about that. You know, so sort of like political correctness. And sometimes I think political correctness goes too far, but sometimes political correctness is just being polite to somebody. And what's wrong with being polite? And what's wrong with being aware that your experiences are not the same experience other people have? But to use, you know, to coin that term, you know, these overly woke kids who are partying and doing drugs, and they're awful people. They're toxic relationships and they're mean to each other. There is no real love there or positive emotions. They all seem to hate each other anyways, but they all are aware of their standing in society and what, you know, the morals of their generation are. And, it really skewers some people on that in the sense that they may say certain things and play lip service and be aware and, you know, like I said, to be woke, but to still be a toxic individual and to, you know, to betray your own beliefs, so to speak. So there's a lot of that going on too. And it's a bit of a mystery. I think it's interesting. I mean, you know, as you're watching it, you're just waiting for the people to get killed because, you know, they start dropping like flies and you're like, I'm not too worried about missing anybody because they're all just these horrible toxic people. I mean, it's a clever take on the one location slasher with some biting social commentary on Generation Z. I'm going to have to say Bodies, Bodies, Bodies rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Brad Pitt's new film, Bullet Train, and Apple TV Plus's Luck. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about the one that's probably going to be the biggest this weekend. At the very least, it's got the biggest stars in it. And that is Bullet Train, exclusively in theaters. Brad Pitt stars in this brightly colored, violent action thriller about assassins on a train double-crossing, well, everyone.
Take the gun.
Every job I do, somebody dies. I'm not that guy anymore.
Some conflicts require a gun.
Okay, what am I snatching and or grabbing?
A briefcase.
You said you wanted simple for your first job back.
Doesn't get simpler.
There's nothing simple about this job.
Something else going on here?
Yeah.
I covered this trailer several months ago when it came out, and it looks interesting, but I remember seeing the trailer and thinking, that's a lot. That's a bit much. And watching this movie, it throws a lot at you. Now, one of the things that terrified me about this movie when I first was looking ahead to review it, I had seen an initial running time of over 2.5 hours. And I'm like, holy cats, with a movie like Bullet Train, it should be 90 minutes long. Well, it's not 2.5 hours, but it is 2 hours plus. It's like 2 hours and 6 or 7 minutes. That includes the credits at the end. And it does run a bit long, but it has this frenetic energy that that you see in like Quentin Tarantino and Guy Ritchie and even stuff like John Wick, that kind of excitement and scrappiness to it. Also like a Quentin Tarantino movie, or a Guy Ritchie movie for this matter, it loves to hear itself talk. There are a lot of long, drawn-out, chatty scenes. And there have to be, because the plot is at times kind of convoluted. I mean, it starts off relatively simple, where Brad Pitt is this criminal who's been hired to steal a briefcase on this bullet train coming out of, I think, Tokyo to Kyoto or something like that. And he keeps running into people who are also bad guys with a mission on this train. And every single person has a backstory. Every single person gets a flashback. Sometimes those flashbacks are in slow motion, which is contributing to the 2 hour plus running time. And it's punchy and it's clever and it's cool. And any one of those stories is kind of interesting in their own. It does become a little bit absurd after a while watching this movie, where you're like, there's no way this is all tied together as neatly as it is. I mean, it just becomes, like I said, a bit much. That's if I were to sum up this movie, I'd say it's a bit much. I didn't love it. It does have some neat stuff in there. It has some great action sequences, and that's, if that's what you want, you just need that frenetic energy. Yeah, it absolutely delivers on that. But it is just a fiercely overwritten story. And even when it gets to the end just overstays its welcome. It's one of those things where you're finally, you know, you're getting to this climax, you're waiting, and then they're going, and then they go into slow motion, and you're like, holy cats, man, really, seriously? Slow motion again? Are you trying to make it longer? Which is such a diversion from some of the other great action moments on the train, which are done at full speed, which work. So, you know, the characters individually, any of them on their own, kind of interesting and clever and different and cool. And the action on its own really, really works. And the other thing that's really neat is the visuals. I mean, it's bright and, it, you know, it's got that neon Tokyo glow to it. And it's just dripping in Japanese pop culture type things. You know, everything from fizzy drinks to anime characters, to just the bright lights of the city. It's very, very Japanese pop culture, in-your-face, Skittle-colored and flavored pop culture. I mean, it's not like a samurai movie, is what I'm saying. It's the hyper-kinetic pop culture that you get. And it works in that sense. And I did get a little tired in it. But if you can get past the overwritten characters, it's not bad. You know, I mean, like I said, you know, it's like Quentin Tarantino and Guy Ritchie had a baby and raised it on pop rocks and hyperkinetic Japanese pop culture. But, you know, if that's something you want, it reminds me a little bit of that, you know, sort of the flavor and feel and the color palette of Gunpowder Milkshake, which was, I think, last year on Netflix. So that's the kind of movie, although Gunpowder Milkshake was a little more simple and easier to follow. This one, like I said, gets a little convoluted. But still, yeah, you know, it can be fun. It's sort of like that last hurrah at the big summer movie, so I'm going to have to say Bullet Train kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Luck. This is a new animated film, and it is on Apple TV Plus. I believe it's also getting released in theaters. But most people are going to have the opportunity to see this on Apple TV Plus. Now, it's interesting because Apple TV Plus is coming off the Oscar win for Coda. Apple TV Plus, you got to remember, is the only streaming service that has ever won an Oscar for Best Picture, much to the chagrin of Netflix, because doggone it, they've been trying. But this one is produced by John Lasseter. He's behind it. Of course, he had a little bit of a disgraceful exit from Pixar, and he's still doing animation stuff. The story follows a young woman with bad luck who finds a portal to a secret world of luck where she tries to change her fate.
I blamed bad luck for everything that's gone wrong in my life.
Until
I found an actual lucky penny. And what did I do? I flushed it down the toilet.
You flushed my penny down the toilet!
You just talked. Wait! I just need another penny!
Ah, humans cannot be here!
Where's here?
The land of luck.
I'll leave as soon as you give me another lucky penny.
The look of the film, it looks fine. I mean, you expect that. You got John Lasseter behind it. He's working with, I think it's Skydance is the animation studio that does it. And so the stuff looks good. It doesn't look cheap. It doesn't look like these direct-to-TV series, or it doesn't look like these, you know how if you've watched the How to Train Your Dragon movies, how good they look, and then you go watch the How to Train Your Dragon TV show on Netflix, and it just doesn't quite look as good. And same thing with the Kung Fu Panda series. This one looks good. I mean, it looks theatrical. It looks like it's got a theatrical level of animation. There are some things that are a little bit simplified, but the animation's good. And honestly, I gotta say, I think the story's kind of cute. I think the actors, the voice actors behind it, you got Simon Pegg playing the black cat who is lucky in Scotland, but not anywhere else. And he's one of the main characters. And it's a sweet story. I mean, it's a rote story. You've seen this before. It's nothing new. Kind of how I said Prey was nothing groundbreaking. This isn't terribly groundbreaking. The whole thing is the woman's completely plagued with bad luck, and she finds a lucky penny that dropped off of this black cat, the special magic penny, and then she finds a portal to this world, and they lose the penny, and she has to get that so she can change the fate and help out a friend of hers who grew up in an orphanage with her. You know, so it takes a while to justify its story. I mean, the penny and the luck thing is just a MacGuffin to get her into the world. And they've got, you know, different fairy tale creatures. It's all run by leprechauns and stuff like that, even though leprechauns aren't particularly lucky if you actually study their history. But, you know, it for sort of that pop culture understanding of fantasy creatures, it works. I thought it was sweet. It's not at the level of Pixar or DreamWorks even. It's or Illumination. It's not something that you'd expect to see from one of the major animation studios. But it's still cute. It's something I think kids can like, and it's got enough flash and story and characters, and it's got a neat little message and everything. You know, I think it works. You know, it's not as great as its Pixar pedigree, but it's still a cute little film with sweet, if not derivative, characters. So I'm going to say I kind of liked it. I thought it was cute. Kind of rocks. It's a kids movie. Check it out. It's on Apple TV Plus.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up on Fat Guys at the Movies, we're going to be going into the Home Cinema Roundup and talking about The Sandman on Netflix and 13 Lives on Prime. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with some reviews and jump into the TV world. Well, the streaming TV world. I do still think there's a difference. I know there are some people who will be like, oh, that's just a web series. It's not a web series. If you're watching it on a TV, it's not a web series. Netflix comes to the TV. It's like cable. It's technically a TV show, but it's a series. It's something along the level of what you'd see on HBO. And one of the series they've got now is a thought to be unadaptable comic book property called The Sandman. This adaptation of Neil Gaiman's comic book Hero follows the Lord of Dreams as he regains his power after being held captive for a century on Earth.
Your waking world is shaped by dreams. Dreams and nightmares that I create and which I must control.
He's out there looking for me, isn't he?
Can you imagine the damage he could do?
I need your help. If dreams disappear, then so will humanity.
I have to admit, I've never really read the Sandman comics. I bought a couple back in the 80s or 90s, probably early 90s. And Gaiman used a lot of watercolor painting, and it was like the Hellblazer comics, where it was very abstract, and the imagery was strange, and it's not just like a typical Superman comic. So just because it's comic books, and anyone who understands comic books, anyone who's read comics in their life, know that comics range everything from Richie Rich and Casper the Friendly Ghost, all the way up to these completely bizarre, out of the box graphic novels that are 100% for adults and not for kids. And The Sandman was always a grown-up comic. I never got into it because it was kind of almost too bizarre and strange, just even in its presentation. It was also a prestige-level comic. At the time, you know, it was a really nicely printed comic. It was on really nice paper with good ink, and so they cost an arm and a leg. It was a lot more expensive than the dollar you'd spend on a Superman comic or a Batman comic. So I've read one or two issues, but I remember it being just really out there. But I've always been curious about him, and I think Gaiman does some really interesting stuff. His work has been adapted both good and bad over the years. Probably one of the best adaptations of Gaiman's work was the series he does, Good Omens, for Amazon Prime. That really kind of, I think, captures the flavor of what he does. And the spiritual and, sort of metaphysical characters that he puts in his, and sometimes fantasy level characters he puts in his stuff. So I've never read the comic book long enough to really understand it and have internalized it. I just have a passing knowledge of it. But I have to say, watching this series, I've only seen 4 or 5 episodes, but I it's intriguing. It feels very much like a Netflix show. It looks like a Netflix show. You know, you compare it to some of their other fantasy stuff, even something like Sweet Tooth. It kind of has that the Netflix look to it. And that's not meant to be a bad thing, but it looks, it looks like a modern fantasy that we see quite often on streaming. But it has some really neat imagery to it. And it has these characters that are taking the time to develop, but it's not just all world building. That was one of my problems with Carnival Row that was on Prime, is I felt that they just kept building worlds and building worlds. Even to a degree, Sweet Tooth kind of felt that way on Netflix, where you're just like, oh, quit world building and tell a story and get to a plot. And this one does have a plot, and it certainly is propelling forward, and it has interesting characters that they keep introducing, and the Sandman himself is not human, so he doesn't have the emotions of a human. And so you do see this to be very, it's very dark, but it is also, it's also one of those movies that takes place in the kind of universe where it's pretty clear human beings do not rank terribly high in the hierarchy of beings in all of creation. So I think it's a neat show. I enjoy it. I'll probably continue to watch it. I don't know how well the fans are receiving it, but I think it's neat. I mean, it's dark and it's dramatic. And this may not be as out there as the comics, but it makes for a cool series. I'm going to have to say The Sandman rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on 13 Lives, Ron Howard directs this true story about a group of Thai children trapped in a flooded cave and the efforts to rescue them.
You following what's happening in Thailand?
Some kids stuck in a cave.
It's just a tourist cave.
It looks easy, but when it's flooded, it's impassable.
It takes a certain kind of mindset for the deep cave diving. You have to be a bit nuts.
They're very, very dangerous.
High water level and the low visibility.
Barely shoulder wide, pulling against very strong currents.
Last seen 9 days ago, 12 boys and their coach are trapped in the flooded caves.
This reminded me initially, even just from the title of it. Remember that movie, The 33, that came out 3, 4, or 5 years ago? That was when Antonio Banderas played one of these Chilean miners who got caught in this cave-in, and then there was about this big rescue effort to get them out. That's immediately what I thought of. And it makes a great comparison to this one, because Ron Howard takes an approach to this movie that's more docudrama than anything else. It's less about the spectacle and the sensation, whereas The 33 was getting into the characters and in the interpersonal things and sort of developing these relationships, where this one is really almost like you're this fly on the wall watching them and try to devise this plan to rescue these kids. Because it wasn't a cave and it was a flooding. It was monsoon season and they got an early storm and it flooded the cave, and they're worried because it's monsoon season. So a full monsoon's on its way, and it can rain for days and it's going to flood the rest of the cave. So there's an urgency there to get the kids out. And plus they're running out of oxygen in there. And the dive to get them was like 5 hours going through stalagmites and all this kind of stuff and narrow tunnels. And you're diving for 5 hours. And that's a fascinating challenge. And it was a real life thing. And instead of spending too much time on the interpersonal relationships and the character building of the people who are rescuing, played by Viggo Mortensen and Colin Farrell, they're just kind of along for the ride. And there's a good and a bad to that. There's a good part of that is it feels like you're watching the events actually happen. It feels much more real. It doesn't feel contrived or anything like that. And you have some very good performances and some acting, and it shows, you know, the challenges, because there are these British divers who eventually figured out how to do it, how to get in there. I mean, because they had like Navy SEALs from Thailand who couldn't even get to where the kids were, and these British divers figured out how to do it. So you've got them as main characters, but they don't grandstand. It's not about them. It's about the rescue effort. And it's neat to see how the plan develops and how there's people thinking the kids are going to die and the kids might be saved. And you're watching the emotions. You're watching the clash between the authorities and the parents that are trying to find out about their kids, because they were stuck in there for weeks. And also just the language barrier. So it's a neat, pragmatic setup that really works. And the downside to that, though, is it can be gripping in its own right, and it is, but it doesn't have the stuff that people are conditioned to feel they need in a movie. It doesn't have the dramatic yelling scenes. It doesn't have the interpersonal relationship of the kids in there trying to struggle, you know, the struggle of human survival and that sort of thing. They don't waste their time on the fluffy emotional elements that a writer would want to embellish into there. It's all done on the surface. So as interesting and as compelling as it is, it can feel a little pedantic at times. And I really didn't feel it that way, but I can see where somebody would worry about it that way. I mean, this is deliberately paced and gripping, and it tells a pragmatic story without all that Hollywood flash. And this was in theaters for a week or so, and now it's dropping on Prime Video. So if you've got a Prime Video subscription, you can watch it anytime you want to and enjoy it. I'm going to say that 13 Lives kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
New on disc this week, we've got Flatliners in 4K, plus a bunch of Chuck Norris movies coming to physical media again, including Good Guys Wear Black, The Octagon, and A Force of One. And that's it. Next week, I'm going to be talking about the new films Fall and Mac and Rita, as well as the Disney series I Am Groot. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.